today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Got a double dose of newer rock bands for you, even though the guys from Hands Like Houses are approaching their 10-year anniversary. Trenton Woodley from the band joins me and talks about their band and their music.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we make rock music, and for me, rock music is defined by being, you know, it's loud, it's urgent, it's passionate, and that's kind of what we do.
He talks about influences, the WWE using their song Monster on an event in their home country of Australia. Plus, a rocker who had a huge influence on him. He came this close to meeting him.
Because he just seemed like such a switched-on dude, and definitely someone I would have loved to, you know, talk shit with and just, you know, talk about music. And
we talk about success in the U.S., doing shoeies, and more with Trenton Woodley from Hands Like Houses. Up next, it's Josh Kennedy from the band The Black Moods. I have to admit, I've never talked this much about the Gin Blossoms with anyone as much as Josh.
So from then on, I was like a Gin Blossoms junkie. And then
they're opening on tour for legendary guitar player Joe Perry. We talk about the state of current rock, the single Belladonna, and the wine it spawned, and tons more. Trevor Woodley of Hands Like Houses and Josh Kennedy from The Black Moods today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, Talkin' Rock. I do appreciate it. Real fast, some business to take care of before getting to the interview today. If you like this podcast, a 5-star rating, a review, share with your friends, of course, and keep coming back because we've got a lot of great guests on tap, so subscribe if you get a chance. Hey, coming up here in just a bit between the interviews, I'll talk with Al Beck, some current rock news. Rock news about James Hetfield from Metallica, Iron Maiden, Miles Kennedy, even a death metal band that does Seinfeld-related songs. That's all coming up after Trenton Woodley from the band Hands Like Houses. He's up first, and like I said, Josh Kennedy from the Black Moods is going to be coming up second. Yeah, the guys from Hands Like Houses, man, just continued to pound the pavement with their new record, Annan, which came out in October. They're in the middle of doing 7 in a row right now, as Trenton from the band was telling me.
Yeah, dude, still us. You know, added the show kind of last minute, but sometimes it's just better to do, you know, better to do a show than just to sit around twiddling your thumbs in a car park somewhere between cities.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I should be talking to you today. I just saw Bohemian Rhapsody yesterday. Have you seen that movie yet?
I have not yet, no.
Yeah, it's kind of inspirational as far as, you know, writing music and stuff. And I kind of hope that you had seen it just to talk about that for a second and compare it with your band. But, man, it's really cool. It's really cool how, you know, it's like, were you a fan of Queen at all growing up?
Kind of. I mean, it was around it. My mom loved it, but I don't know. She didn't listen to a lot of music, so I feel like it was mostly my dad's sort of stuff that I kind of grew up with.
Yeah. Did your parents have a big influence on you as far as music is concerned when you were growing up?
I mean, without, you know, associating myself directly with church and religion, you know, I went to church a lot growing up and had a lot of, I guess, influence from that regard. My parents were both in different church bands and both had their own catalogs of music and stuff, but yeah, for me, it was around, but I don't think it was, like, you know, directly a big part of my life until, I guess, I reached my teen years and started kind of listening to rock music and, you know, getting into that side of the world.
Yeah, what kind of stuff turned you on? I can remember the first time I heard Ozzy. That was, like, my gateway drug to rock and roll. What was yours?
Well, that's a tough one. It was kind of a slippery slope. I kind of started with, you know, Linkin Park and a few bands like that. And then kind of worked my way through, actually went pretty heavy, pretty fast through a bunch of solid-state bands around, like, 2005-ish. So, you know, bands like Under Oath and Norma Jean, and that was kind of my in towards, I guess, the heavier side of music, and kind of been drifting back slowly ever since to a bit more of a, you know, the wider, more mainstream rock world.
Mm. Now, growing up in Australia and stuff, these bands don't really come around all the time like they do here in the States. So did you try to help as many concerts and live acts as you could?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, growing up in Canberra, which is not the biggest city in Australia by any shot, we didn't necessarily get a lot. So we'd often make trips up to Sydney to see, you know, favorite bands. So about, you know, 3 or 4 hour drive back in the day. So you'd always make a weekend of it. And go and see the bands that we love. Like, you know, I remember going to shows of bands like Sex Survive and Alexis on Fire, and went to go see Story of the Year and Emery and a bunch of bands like that up in Sydney, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah,
that was always a big experience.
They don't really do a lot of tours down there as far as they do like big shows, right? Isn't it like more like festival shows down there or no?
Yeah, these days I think, festival culture kind of drove Australia for a long time with Soundwave and Big Day Out especially. And since those festivals kind of went away, we still have a really strong festival culture, but I think it's a bit more of like a broad build type thing. There's not really specifically rock festivals until, obviously Download and Good Things and Unify coming around the last couple of years. So we do have a pretty strong festival culture, but as I guess the big crazy ones like Soundwave and Big Day Out have gone away, I think a lot more bands are just coming out on their own tours. And sometimes that's, a better show experience, at least for me as a listener. I prefer, big shows than festivals personally.
Yeah. Now, you guys are, of course, doing these seven shows in a row, like you said, up here in the States and whatnot. And I have to ask you this, and I know you've probably answered this question a billion times, so just indulge me. But what's the deal with the name?
Look, it was something that just kind of just felt like it fit what we were doing. There wasn't really a specific meaning or purpose behind it. It was just something that, in a kind of weird, intangible way, just fit with what we were doing. And, it's kind of just stuck around. It's easy to remember, and we don't hate it still. So, it just made sense to stick with it.
Yeah, I had to ask you about that because I'm kind of new to you guys. The new record just dropped back in October and stuff, and I was curious about that.
Yep.
If somebody asked you to describe your music, what do you say?
It's rock music. I don't like to try and, my thing would always be just to try and encourage someone to actually listen to it rather than try and, go in with expectations of being this genre or that genre. I think it's, we try and write stuff that you just approach it with an open mind, whatever style it is. We just try and write good songs in whatever style we're writing at the time. So, I don't know. I'll bet you about that question. it's always a tough one to answer.
Yeah, because I'm trying, whenever you hear a band, sometimes, something pops into your head right away. It's like, oh, this sounds like this or whatever. And even though they may not intentionally try to do that, I can't really peg you guys.
Beyond that, at the end of the day, we have five very different music tastes between the five of us. And so we all listen to different things and draw from different influences. So when we find a song that we all like as it's coming together, then usually we're in a pretty good spot starting wise. But I guess that is what makes it difficult to kind of, narrow us down to any particular genre.
Yeah. Now, with the new record being so fresh and stuff, it's got to be exciting to get out there and tour on it, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Just seeing the new songs connect with people, it's always a little bit nerve-wracking to kind of go into a tour. It's like, well, I don't know how many people are going to know these songs, but let's play them all the same. But honestly, people have been so around it already. It's been really encouraging. So very excited to, give it more time and a couple more tours and see where it ends up in a year or so.
Yeah, I just talked to Lizzie Hale, and she kind of reiterated just what you said. She's like, you go out there, you're so excited about the new stuff. You just hope it connects with people, hope people like it as well as much as you do,
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you guys got a pretty good push here from the WWE in your home country of Australia. Talk about that Super Showdown where they used the track Monster.
Yeah, that was a pretty crazy one for us because we actually woke up because the time zone difference. We woke up with an email in our inbox saying that, hey, WWE wants to use this song. Are you guys cool with it? They want to use it for the first ad in like literally 6 hours. And we're like, let's do it. And within a couple of hours, we had people just tagging us on Twitter, like, holy crap, did I just see Hands Like Houses on WWE? Like, it was during a Raw event that they played it out, and just straight away had people connecting, like, holy crap, you guys are on WWE, that's amazing. And it was actually, to be honest, we like signed up for it, not necessarily really knowing what it was going to be or how big a deal it was going to be, but the more, like, as it came together and as we started to see what it was doing, we're like, wow, this is not only a massive event, but just, the amount of wrestling fans out there, like, it was kind of eye-opening for us because we never really kind of realized how big of a machine it actually was until the music was playing and we were just seeing it everywhere. It was pretty exciting.
Now, were you guys in town for that event?
We actually weren't. We were really keen to try and make it happen, but it was we used to have a keyboardist in the band, and it was actually his wedding that same day, so we were there for that. But we had I had friends that went to the event, and they were sending us, Instagram stories and Snapchats and everything, and just showing us, the song playing in this stadium to 80,000 people. It was crazy.
Yeah, that's you pegged it right, by the way. That is a big machine that goes around the world.
It is. It really is.
So you just said that your ex keyboard player had his wedding that night. Now you guys kind of did you guys I don't know what happened with that, because he left in 2014. Was that like a moment that you guys decided, well, we should go in a different direction, or was he leaving on his own, or how, what happened there?
Honestly, he actually just got off of his dream job. You know, for him, that was a teaching support role that he was really, really enjoying when he was home off tour. And they basically offered him a full-time position doing what he loved. And for him, the adventure was, you know, in the toughing it out through those early days. That was the fun time for him. And we kind of got to that point where he more or less doing the same thing, just a little bit more comfortable with a slightly bigger paycheck every time. And, you know, he felt like he'd kind of gotten, he'd achieved everything he wanted to, and just, you know, had the chance to kind of move on with his life. And we were stoked for him, and he was stoked for us. And it's, you know, we really didn't kind of miss a step in the whole process. So, you know, we're still good friends with him, keep up with him when we're home. And yeah.
Was there a time where you guys discussed maybe like bringing in another guy to replace him, or did you guys just, nah, he's gone, we're just going to move on?
I think we did for a moment, but I think, you know, the way that we write our music, we do have a lot of, you know, I guess like synths and keys tracks in behind all the guitars, but there's so many different things going on. Even for him to manage the various different sounds and parts was going to take this crazy rig bigger than old mate from, I can't remember his name, from... Yeah, like, you know, the old kind of classic rock bands of the 70s and 80s, where they had like six keyboards all for different sounds, like, and that wouldn't even scratch the surface for all the different things we had. So we just figured, you know, it's easier just to have a laptop kind of playing that stuff. And at the end of the day, it's all like, you know, it's all about enhancing like the guitar and the rhythm and the bass, which is what we do anyway. So it's kind of, it was just easy to just kind of play the, you know, the textural stuff just off a laptop instead of trying to bring someone in. And all the extra challenges that come with, you know, bringing in someone new, especially after, you know, at that point, 6 years of being a band, and now we're almost hitting 10. You know, just to bring someone new into the band would, I know, be really strange at this point in time.
Now, when you guys were at the wedding, did you guys watch the pay-per-view on a TV there?
Oh, no, we didn't. We had to just live vicariously through our friends on Instagram.
So,
hey, we had a blast. It was good to keep in touch.
Yeah, there you go. I'm just giving you a hard time. You guys come to America and stuff. I've asked bands about this before from outside of America, but how important is success in America to a band like you?
To be honest, it's just part of a bigger picture. You know, for us, we had our very first kind of early successes over here with, you know, American label and American team, and things kind of picked up steam here. You know, we grew up in the Warped Tour world, which is, at that point in time, was almost shooting fish in a barrel. It was a very small, tight-knit community that was really embracing our new music. So we kind of got a whole bunch of momentum here early on. But as the rest of the world kind of caught up, especially in Australia, you know, America's, I wouldn't say it's crucial to our success, but at the same time, it is such a big place and it has so much potential to grow in. And for us, it's, you know, just part of a big global picture. We don't, you know, obviously we have different strategies for different countries, but at the end of the day, you know, we'll just play where we'll be had. And so far, so good. I mean, people are still into what we're doing, and, you know, we keep having these new opportunities come up here in the States. So, yeah, we'll be here as long as it's worth coming and having a blast so far.
Now, you're playing a show here in Detroit on Tuesday night, and did any Detroit music influence you growing up? I mean, Kid Rock, Eminem, any of the EDM stuff, any classic rock stuff, anything like that? And feel free to say no, by the way.
No. To be honest, coincidentally, like to me personally, one big influential band for me growing up was Shudders, that are all from that area. And we got to do a tour with them a couple of years ago. So that was really cool to kind of actually kind of come full circle. And one of the bands that I really looked up to growing up, we got to tour with them, which is pretty sweet. And obviously Eminem, such a phenomenal lyricist that, you know, it's definitely someone I listen to throughout different album cycles, just to develop the way he links syllables together. It's really like a good outside influence outside the rock world to kind of draw from lyrically. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I noticed in this movie yesterday with Bohemian Rhapsody, and I don't know how you feel about this. I'm not a musician. I've never fronted a band or nothing, but you're the front guy, man. Do you put more pressure on yourself to like entertain and be like maybe a focal point for the band?
Definitely. I mean, I think the ongoing joke in any touring situation is that, you know, the singers don't carry gear. And my response to that is that, well, I carry the weight of responsibility. So, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, the singer is always the focal point of any band, like, whether they like it or not. I think, you know, the way that we relate to music as humans is that we look for that kind of person, that human connection is kind of the first point we have. So it's through the lyrics and through the vocal melodies is what we're, our brains are tuned to. So it certainly carries a, you know, a lot of responsibility, but you know, I like to think I'm a fairly level-headed guy. I'm not one who drinks or parties too hard. I just get into my job and kind of make the most of it. And yeah, you know, I enjoy it, but it certainly takes, it certainly puts a lot of strain, a lot of pressure on you to kind of deliver, especially from a writing perspective, to just make sure you keep coming up with the ideas and the melodies and the songs that people connect with, because if people don't connect to your music, then, you know, it's not much going to happen for you as a band, for sure.
Yeah, and what kind of lead singers did influence you as far as at least fronting a band and maybe even lyricists as well?
Look, rest in peace, but Chester Bennington was probably my biggest and clearest, you know, influences to my, you know, my melody style, my vocal style and everything. But, I mean, there's countless others beyond that. People like Dustin Kensrue from Thrice, Anthony Green from Circus Survive, just trying to think a bit more broadly, but yeah, like, I mean, there's been so many amazing singers over the years. You see, you know, all you have to do is just look at one successful band and there's always something to draw from their front person as to how they write, how they perform, how they sing. There's always new influence and new inspiration there, so try and keep my open mind at any given time.
Yeah, you know what? It's so funny you mentioned Chester Bennington, and I suppose that's not too far out of the realm of what you guys do, but just talking to you, I was just thinking about Chester Bennington. You know, I thought that that would probably be the guy you'd connect with, and that was the first person you mentioned.
Yeah, today I think my biggest regret is that I never actually managed to catch them live. You know, they did walk tour on one of the years that we didn't. You know, they've played Australian shows and tours when we've been away ourselves and never quite caught them. But I was actually working at Soundwave Festival a number of years ago, driving for Stone Sour. I was just shuttling their crew and the band around the festival site. But they did a side show, and I was standing just a couple of metres away from Chester and just kind of, you know, waiting for my next pickup. But just hearing him chat to a couple of the local crew and just seemed like such a level-headed, down-to-earth dude. I really wish I'd said hello, especially all things considered in the meantime. Just because he just seemed like such a switched on dude, and definitely someone I would have loved to, you know, talk shit with and just, you know, talk about music and get his perspective on life. So, you know, that's an opportunity gone, I guess. But, you know, I think the mark he made through music is always going to be the most important lasting thing. And, you know, I hope that Linkin Park do have the, you know, chance to, you know, kind of go forward, but I understand if they don't, it's a tough one, but I hope to get to see him one day.
Yeah, it's funny how you were feet away from Chester, never having talked to him, never having interacted with him, and you kind of pegged him. I had a chance to meet him and be around him a few times, and exactly what you said was just how he was.
Yeah.
You know,
it's definitely a big tragedy. I mean, it's a tough world we live in, and obviously, you know, the mental health conversation has come to the fore. Finally, it's taken years of work to get people actually talking about that stuff, and it sucks that, you know, it takes losing people for us to actually grapple with it. But at the end of the day, I think that there is a more positive conversation around the way that we interact with each other and the way we interact with the world and interact with ourselves as well. Like, I think there's a lot to be, you know, drawn from that, and hopefully that's an impact that he has, that he's, you know, further that conversation towards the point where, you know, it will be one person less lost, and then it's all worthwhile, you know?
Yeah. So the new record's out right now, Anon. I mean, just talk about the album, what you guys tried to accomplish with this record, and what you hope people gravitate towards when they listen to it.
Funnily enough, I think it's probably the least intent we've put into an album, in the sense that we very much, like, try... The big buzzword of the recording sessions was that we had to just trust our back brain. You know, the part of your brain that instinctually feels like something's right. If it feels right, then you know what? That's the foundation that you build everything on top of. So for us, you know, we had a very stressful album writing process with the album before called Dissonance. It was packed between a tight touring schedule, and we had to push the release back because we didn't finish it in the time that we had. And it, you know, certainly wasn't to the quality that we wanted at first, so we had to, like, book more studio time to get it all right. And while we're stoked with the end result, it was just such a difficult process for us that we're like, we don't want to do that again. So we gave ourselves a bunch of time for this record. We got time to fly out a producer to Australia and wrote a bunch of songs in my backyard with him by the little music studio, and plus we set up a tent for the guys to jam in, you know, while we're working on other things, and we're just shooting my ears back and forth over a few days. And yeah, we had fun with it, man. We relaxed. We, you know, gave ourselves plenty of downtime and hang time just to kind of enjoy ourselves, and I think that that carries through to the record. You know, it's a lot more playful, it's a lot more, you know, it's got a lot more attitude and a bit more of like a, I don't know, a bit more of a kick to it that we haven't had in our previous records. So we've really enjoyed playing them live, especially because it has just been, you know, these are fun songs. They're fun to play, fun to write, fun to listen to, and, you know, we're stoked on how it's come together.
Yeah, the back brain thing, I never heard of that before, but I know it's exactly what you're saying. I think Zach Wilde said many years ago, when you're thinking, you're stinking. Just get out there and play and have fun.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, obviously, it takes years to kind of train those instincts properly. And, you know, it takes writing a lot of songs, and a lot of songs that probably suck along the way to get that instinct honed. But once, you know, after a few records, you know, you certainly should have at least an idea of what you're trying to do and the way that you do it. So, yeah, we got there in the end, and we're stoked and look forward to seeing where it takes us.
So you got this tour that you're on right now, and does this take you through the remainder of 2018?
Yeah, pretty much. We finish up in, I think it's LA on December 8th is the last show. And then we, jet home for Christmas and got a big Australian run. Some of the biggest headline shows will actually be biggest headline shows we've done to date back in Australia in February. And we're actually jetting off to South Africa straight after that. So, you know, even though it's the end of the year on the calendar, it doesn't really it feels like kind of the start of ours. But, it's really exciting just to have so many big things happening and really keen to, ride out the rest of it and have a good time.
Now, my friend Eric from I Prevail did a shoey on stage in Australia. Are you familiar with that? Right?
Yeah.
Do you know the story about what he did?
I'm the proudest national export.
But he apparently, someone threw their shoe up on stage, hit him with, and he's like, what the hell's going on here? And the crowd started chanting shoey or something. So one of the local guys like said in his earpiece or whatever, it's like, they want you to drink a beer out of the shoe. Apparently you're supposed to like just put the beer in the shoe and then drink it. Well, he actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, he poured the beer in the shoe.
Yeah, no, that's what you do. You pour it into the shoe.
Okay.
You
know, that's gross.
Doesn't really count if you just put the can in it.
And, okay.
It's gross. It's gross. I have only ever done one shoey, and it was my first and last, and that was during a Silvertooth concert in Minnesota. Their band Beartooth and Silverstein kind of joined up for a super set, and it's always a special event, and they were all good friends of ours, and it was a bit of a party vibe on stage, and made a commitment with Joel, our bassist, and like, all right, this is the first and last show I'm going to do in my life. Let's do it. And got out there, did it, and have it, you know, it's off the list. Can check it off, and never again, thank you. Especially not with someone else's shoe. That's gross.
Exactly. And he's telling me it's like they're playing in the summertime, and it's sweat and sticky and grimy. And Eric's just one of those guys, man. He's just like, hey, he'll do anything once, you know, and he might even do it again. I don't know. But he never forgot that. It was a funny story he told me. So, well, listen, Trenton,
I feel like people over here are starting to really hear about it now, which I cringe every time someone brings it up, because it's definitely not our proudest national export, like I said.
Well, let's hope no shoes fly up on stage Tuesday night, Detroit, the Magic Stick. But hey, listen, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Hope nothing but the best for you and the band, and have a great end of 2018 here. Anon is out right now. Looking forward to seeing you guys, and thanks so much for your time.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And there you go, Trenton Woodley from the band Hands Like Houses. And like I said, Tuesday night at the Magic Stick here in Southeast Michigan, if you're in the area. Have you ever heard of the shoey before?
No, the shoey?
Yeah.
I mean, crazy.
I know. It's so funny. He's like, ah, man, I don't know. It's just not something I want, you know, translating over here to America.
That's what I love is the fact that he's like, yeah, I don't want to bring that with me.
Yeah. He did it once. He said, did it, done it, been there, see you later, don't want to do it again.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a shame that we got out on the podcast today.
So whatever you do tomorrow or wherever you see these guys in concert, do not throw your shoes on stage. I repeat, not throw your shoes
or
on stage.
Everybody. Just get all the shoes.
That's so funny. You know, like I was talking with him about, though, it's like, it's, you know, I just had this Chester Bennington vibe about him. And like he said, he was standing, you know, mere feet away from him at a gig down there in Australia. Didn't have a chance to talk to him. And man, he just kind of missed those moments. You know, I've done stuff in the past where, like, I went out to Los Angeles and I specifically went to the Rainbow just to see if Lemmy was there, and he was not there.
No.
You know, stuff like that. So
he was always there. I've heard so many many people have run into him there.
He wasn't there when I was there.
Well, that's too bad.
So, anyways, but yeah, good stuff right there. Hands Like Houses. Hey, coming up here in a few minutes, I've got Josh from the band The Black Moods. Really cool band, just a straight ahead rock band. And they're going to be opening up some shows here for Joe Perry, which is, I guess he's on the mend. I guess he's doing pretty good. So
it's good to hear. Yeah,
really. So, anyways, we'll talk with Josh coming up here in a few minutes. But speaking of great guitar players, Al Beck, not him.
Yeah,
he's got he's got a story about James Hetfield.
I have a guitar.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah,
can you play anything on it?
I can palm mute and play power chords. It's about all I got.
Okay, so, well, it's more than I can do.
Well, yeah, James Hetfield's on the topic of guitars. There's been an announcement that ESP is going to be releasing a new James Hetfield Signature Series guitar. It is, if you've seen them out on tour, it's the replica of the current model that he's playing for the World Wired tour right now. But here's the thing, it'll be a perfect Christmas gift for anyone in your family that's a guitar player who knows what the hell all this means. It's the Signature Series LTD Snakebite SE baritone model.
Okay.
If you know what that means, it might be a good gift for you. I'm not exactly sure if it'll be out for Christmas or not, but it said it'd be releasing soon.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, James Hetfield is like the epitome of frontman rock and roll singer and stuff, and you know, anything that James puts out, I'd like to buy. So.
Yeah, certainly. And it's a really nice looking guitar too. It's kind of got this bluish purple color to it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's signature body style too that we all know for him.
You know who is a gigantic, and I forgot to ask him about this last time I was talking to him, but Josh Rand from Stone Sour is like in love with James Hetfield.
Yeah.
Like, that's his guy, you know.
Yeah.
And I was gonna ask him about it last time I saw him and I totally forgot, but and this was when I was interviewing him back at Rock on the Range or something like that, but I did see him in the summertime here in Detroit, and of course he's got the Metallica t-shirt on.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. Josh did, not James.
Yeah. Yeah. Just in case this is like his name tag. You
know? That's right.
This is me. Speaking of, well, actually, I don't know what speaking of. Smashing Pumpkins.
Switching gears to Smashing Pumpkins.
There you go. Switching gears. That's what I was looking for. Well, I'm an idiot. The internet's the only place for me. Smashing Pumpkins already looking at their future of what they got coming up. And of course, like it or not, Meltdown, the holiday season is just about upon us. And Smashing Pumpkins maybe have plans to do a Christmas album.
Yeah. That seems a little ridiculous to me. Did you hear the story about I mean, come on, you can just, just can't do that.
Yeah.
But did you hear the story about I guess that they were like debuting their brand new record over the weekend at for WGN in Chicago, and there was a female reporter, and I don't know, it's the topic of kids came up, and she says, "Why do you want to have one of mine or something?" And he said something along the lines of, or she said to him, "No, that that venue's closed," or something like
okay.
that, or whatever. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, I think, you know, listen, I've gone 49 years in this world without a Smashing Pumpkins Christmas record, I could probably keep going.
You probably could.
Thought.
Yeah. No, Billy Corgan seems to have a lot of plans. Like we talked before in the podcast about how they got all these unreleased songs that he would like to start putting out. They're redoing one of their albums, Machina, I think they're redoing and re-releasing. They are saying that they've got plans for 2019, and that's what they're already thinking about next year.
Mm-hmm.
They said that there's going to be more tour dates coming in 2019, and he doesn't know when exactly he'll get around to this Christmas album, but he says that he would like to at least get the concept together, even if they don't get around to recording it for a little while. But that is something he would like to do, he says.
I'll tell you this much, man. You make a good Christmas song that resonates with people and people like, man, that could be your ticket for years to come.
Yeah, it really could. Now, Bruce Dickinson, he, a while back, during one of his spoken word gigs that he had done, made some comment about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame being an utter, complete load of bullocks, is the direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people kind of came at him a little bit about that, saying that maybe he's just upset that Iron Maiden has not been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Well, he has come back and responded to that by saying, no, we shouldn't be in there. And if we are inducted, I will refuse.
Yeah, well, what's his name? Carl Palmer said the same thing right here on this very podcast. He says, you know, now that, you know, the other two guys from Emerson, Lake, and Palmer are gone, he's like, why should they induct me now? It's like they had their chance.
Right.
You know, they sold millions of records. Iron Maiden sold millions of records. You know, it's the four guys sitting behind the desk determining what's going to be. And it's almost like they have to have like all their bases covered. So God forbid there should be one year where there's like just rock bands that get in there, because
right,
that would be atrocious. That would be a travesty. You got to put in all sorts of different rock bands and different music genres and stuff. And I've said before, just call it the Music Hall of Fame and be done with it, because this is not the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
At that point, that's exactly it. I mean, yeah, maybe it's a matter of semantics, but I'm with you. It's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. you know.
Yeah, I know. And now Iron Maiden's on it. It's just kind of a disgrace. I was just listening to Rush today, and it's like it took them so long to get in the Hall of Fame. And all three of those guys are so good and so talented and have fans all over the world and done so much for the world of music. And it's like it took them forever to get in.
Yeah.
But yet Garbage has gone in before that. Not the band, I'm just saying. Just actual Garbage has gone in before them.
I was sitting there thinking, like, Garbage?
I don't think they're in there, actually.
I don't think so either. That would be an interesting induction, I'll tell you that. Also, Miles Kennedy, probably one of the more busy guys out there right now in rock and roll, right? He's juggling between Alter Bridge. He's also with the Conspirators, you know, doing the thing with Slash. He's also got his own solo career. And I kind of saw this, I think we can actually kind of relate, you and me, Meltdown, to mm-hmm. this type of mentality. Because somebody asked him about juggling all these different acts, and he said, you know what, honestly, with all the failures that you have early in your career, he goes, I'm not taking any of this for granted. You know, you work as hard as you can while you can. And of course, obviously, he's taking into consideration, you know, that how important his marriage is to him. So because he's gone a lot and he wants to make sure things are good with his wife. But man, he's just riding this wave right now. And I feel like that is something we can relate to, you know, starting off in like radio. You want to do absolutely everything and be available for everything. Didn't you tell me, like, when you started, you used to like do the FM station, then do the AM station in your hometown? Like,
yeah,
on the
I worked 8 months in a row without a day off.
Yeah.
And finally, the boss comes and says, hey, you've been working eight, you know, every day of the week. I'm like, I told you that 4 months ago.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? Yeah, you know, Miles, by the way, that record, You're the Tiger Man, I think it's killer. I've got that at home, and I think it's a great solo record. Slash, you know, of course, Slash, that record speaks for itself. Alter Bridge, I really like Alter Bridge. So, yeah, you know what? Miles Kennedy is a great talent, man. The guy can sing, play guitar. He does it all. He's a super nice guy, and good for him. I mean, you know, let him go do what he wants. So,
yeah, and again, looking for that balance in his life, too. Like you said, it's 15 or 16 years he said he's been married. So, I mean.
And by the way, a little fun fact for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this or not, with your Detroit Lions hat on.
Sure.
You know who we went to high school with?
No.
Jason Hansen.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, the kicker, the longtime kicker for the Lions. I think he kicked
I think he's still the number one scorer.
He might be. So
I know he did have that record. I'm surprised he didn't have the number one tackles, too.
Yeah, right.
That's one of the things I like about that guy. Anyway.
So final thing here for you. I've been waiting for this. Go
yes. Are you a fan of Seinfeld?
Of course I am.
How about death metal?
Well, not as much. But
well, they've come together in a perfect marriage of a band called, oh, God damn it.
It's got to be Seinfeld written in like the death metal lyrics where you can't read it, right? Is that how it works?
It's Grindfeld.
Oh, Grindfeld.
Grindfeld.
That's right,
yeah, I lost it there. Grindfeld is this band. It's made up of a bunch of bands that a lot of people probably haven't heard of. Some of them I have. Rivers of Nile is one of them. Very good band. But it's all Seinfeld themed songs like The Contest, mm-hmm. The Soup Nazi, The Limousine, mm-hmm. the Bizarro Jerry, and also The Letter are the five songs that are available now. But it's super death metal. If you're not into that heavy music, you're not going to like it. But I just love the fact that there's a Seinfeld themed band out there.
It sounds pretty good to me. I mean, that show is so great, man. I love that show. You know, as big as Jennifer Aniston fan as I am, I've never watched Friends.
No,
it's not my thing. No, Seinfeld though. There we go.
Yeah,
now we're talking. Are you done?
I am done.
All right, let's talk with Josh Kennedy from the Black Moods coming up next right here on Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Josh Kennedy's the lead singer of this band called The Black Moods. He plays guitar, sings. The band also includes Jordan Hoffman on bass and Chico on drums. And they're opening up some shows here for the legendary Joe Perry coming through the Motor City in early December playing the Crowfoot. Check the websites and whatnot for wherever they might be playing near you. Just a straight ahead three-piece rock and roll band, and excited to have Josh Kennedy on the Talkin' Rock podcast. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
Good. We got this third line delay that I love so much. So I'll try to do the best I can without talking over you, if that's all right.
Yeah, me too.
There you go. So tell me about your band, The Black Moods. Tell me a little bit of the history of the band for everybody.
Well, I grew up in Missouri. A big fan of the Jim Blossoms, which I grew up loving, and they happen to be from out here in Tempe, Arizona. And so I kind of made up my mind when I was like 13 that I was going to play guitar for them out of all bands, you know, which I wound up moving out here and going to school at the conservatory and running into the guys and wound up teching for them. And then I got to intern at their studio, and I started writing songs and cutting demos, and that's where I met Chico, our drummer. And then we started playing all the local scene, you know, the bars and all that kind of stuff. And then and putting out, you know, our own records and stuff. And we met Jordan, and then now I'm talking to you.
So wait a second. So back up for 1 second. So I take it you're one of these kids who grew up through the 90s and stuff, you know, and you said the Gin Blossoms. And then you wanted to play for them, and next thing you know, you're working for them. I mean, that's like a crazy story.
Well, actually, it's like a little more detail. I was in my room because I grew up in a small town of what's called Wheaton, Missouri, which is like 600 people, you know, no stoplights, bunch of churches, and there's not a lot to do. So my dad is a musician, so I was sitting in my room listening to Eric Clapton's greatest hits timepieces, you know, playing cocaine over and over, annoying the hell out of my mother. And my dad is watching the American Music Awards or something like that, and the Blossoms were on there playing Hey Josie, and he hollers at me. He's like, hey, Bub, you know, they call me Bub or whatever. He's like, come in here. And so I went in there, and he's like, this is good songs. You can write songs like this. And so my dad just got me, like, my dad saying that was, like, you know, the gospel. And so I'm like, oh, my God, I love this band. And so from then on, I was, like, a Jim Blossoms junkie, and then and I started, like, writing, you know, songs here and there, and and when I was like 16 or 17, they had broken up, and the lead singer, Robin Wilson, his new band was playing in Springfield, Missouri, which is a town about an hour from ours. So I went there, and we checked the show out. Wasn't a lot of people there, and I hung around on the side out by the back door, hoping to meet him, and sure enough, he was sitting there smoking a cigarette. So I just got the balls up enough to open the door. And I was like, hey, you know, Robin, I'm a big fan. I just wanted to tell you that. And he kind of rolled his eyes. I was like, great. You know, you can never be by yourself just to have a cigarette, because it wasn't the greatest gig in the world either.
Right, right.
And so we kind of were like, hey, do you want to, you know, do you want to come out to our band van and get stoned, to be honest with you? And he did. And he sat in there and he told us to go be a lawyer or go to college and not to do this, as I gave him my demo cassette, you know. But he said, if you're ever in Tempe, Arizona, look me up. And so, you know, I graduated high school, and there was nothing going on in Missouri for me, really. So I found the Conservatory of Recording Arts out here in Phoenix. And I just, like, in 3 days, I'd moved out here. You know, I was like Beverly Hillbillies, from a town of 600 people to Phoenix, Arizona. And so I came out here, and I found him playing an acoustic gig at Long Wong's, where he would do once in a while. And they ran me out of the bar because I wasn't 21. And when I graduated school, there was a flyer up on the wall that said, wanted conservatory student from Missouri, Smokey Van required. And I thought my classmates were messing with me, you know. And so I called it, and sure enough, it was Robin. And he was like, man, I need an intern. Come and work at my studio. And I did. And then eventually the Blossoms wound up getting back together and touring. And they asked me to guitar check for them. And so I did that for a little while, and they knew how big of a fan I was. And so on my 21st birthday, we were in Florida, and I went to hand the guitar off to the guitar player that I had tuned, and he wouldn't take it. And I was like, hurry up, you got to take this. And I look around, and all the band's pointing at me, and they say, happy birthday. So for my 21st birthday, I wound up playing guitar for the Jim Blossoms.
You know, I gotta admit, I've interviewed a lot of bands before, but I didn't think this was going to take the turn of the Jim Blossoms way. I've never interviewed a band, actually, and talked. Actually, I've never talked about the Jim Blossoms this long in my life. So
I don't think you're the first, buddy.
One of my friends, he's in this band Wilson, and he's like the biggest Toadies fan. It's like the only person I can think of. Like, he just goes bananas for the Toadies, you know? So... So what?
Yeah, we grew up heavy on the Blossoms, the Stone Temple Pilots, Counting Crows. I mean, and also Lynyrd Skynyrd and Creedence and Zeppelin. We're from the Midwest, so, you know, classic rock and that kind of stuff was like, and then, you know, that, you know, Jim Blossoms were the new stuff at the time, so.
Yeah, I was going to say that the whole 90s thing, you know, just like I was talking about it a few minutes ago. But so you guys really have a classic feel. Of course, I mean, you're a classic rock band, three pieces, drums, bass, guitar, vocals. I mean, of course, you do the guitars and the vocals. But it's like, I mean, tell us about, I mean, obviously outside of the Gin Blossoms, what other kind of stuff influences what you guys do? Because I never really picked up on the Gin Blossoms when I listened to the Black Moods.
Yeah, you know, it kind of veered away because, like I said, when I was, like, really young, I was, like, I kind of went backwards because I was always heard Lynyrd Skynyrd, Creedence, all those guys were always playing. And so that's kind of bred into me. But then the Gin Blossoms and Swindle Pots and that stuff kind of was new when I was a little kid. And then as I started playing out more in a band, it kind of, you know, Jimmy Page became my god.
Mm.
And then Cream, you know, and... You know, and I'll be honest with you. Whenever I had plenty of fuzzy Blacklight Hendrix posters on my wall as a kid too. So, but Cream, the Police, you know, the James Gang, all this kind of stuff. Really, because we were four piece when we first moved out here, and our singer, who's still a good friend of mine, got sick and couldn't tour anymore. So we kind of auditioned stuff, and I was writing most of the songs anyways, and so eventually I was just like, screw this, you know, I'll just do it. But keep in mind, when you go from a four-piece to a three-piece, just because I'm doing two guys' jobs doesn't mean we split it like that. No, I don't make any more money. That's why I'm like, shouldn't I be getting paid a little more now? But that's not the case.
Yeah, you're carrying more of the water. There's no question about that. So you're coming through Detroit here with the Joe Perry tour, and I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but do you know how Joe's doing? I mean, I see his Twitter page says he's doing good and stuff like that.
He's doing good. He's on the mend. You know, I'm not really sure what happened. He kind of works his ass off, so I'm pretty sure that was kind of what it was about. But yeah, he's doing better. Everybody, the tour's on, and he's just getting a little rest, probably an IV or two, you know.
Right.
A little dehydrated, but yeah, he's doing good, man. Because he's, you know, he's clean living and everything now, so. That can shock anybody's system.
I know, that's for sure. So we're here in Detroit, like I said. Any Detroit rock and roll creep into your psyche growing up?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's so funny because I used to have an MC5 shirt, and now it just has, I think, the 5 on it because that's worn out,
right.
You know? But, yeah, you know, and... you know, Ted Nugent, he's from around there, right? He's a Michigan guy.
Right, yeah, Nugent, Seeger, Alice Cooper, all those bands, yeah.
Yeah, see, Alice now, because he's a Phoenician.
Right.
Migrated this time. So, yeah, Cooper, he's been a big inspiration, too, and he's helped us out quite a bit, you know. He gave us a quote whenever Belladonna came out, which was really nice of him. And of course, Bob Seeger, because... you know, I was from Missouri, so, you know, that whole, every Seeger song is always on classic rock radio.
Right.
And so that was definitely bred into me. You know, I think that's one of the first songs, Night Moves is one of the first songs, you know, anybody ever learns to play back in my neck of the woods. So.
Yeah, that's cool. You just mentioned Belladonna. Now that's one of your singles, and you guys got The Wine too, eh?
Yeah, The Wine just came out, man. It's pretty crazy because the song came out and there's a great winery in Scottsdale, Arizona, and they just kind of approached us and asked if we'd be interested in doing it. And you know, we happen to be guys that like to drink stuff, you know. so we went and they let us pick it out and all this kind of stuff. So it was really great, and it's not bad. I like it a lot, actually. That was the problem. They gave us some bottles to, you know, to kind of distribute and give away. And I think about half of those made it out because we wound up celebrating, you know, especially once Belladonna hit 29 this week, we had a couple bottles ourselves. So.
There you go. What do you think of the current state of rock? I just asked the guys from... Rival Sons about this. Of course, you know, Greta Van Fleet's from this area. Rival Sons was just here. Dorothy, I mean, there's like a lot of the record company. There's like a lot of rock bands right now. What do you think?
I think it's great. That's Greta. I knew they were from your area. We went and saw them, and I got a friend that plays bass in Dorothy, so they came through town, and I checked it out. I think it's awesome, because what we're trying to do, too, is because a lot of the kids these days, you know, it's kind of like I kind of look at it as the way that Zeppelin and those guys and the Stones reintroduced, like, the blues to you know, people when they came out, they took the blues and like recreated. It seems like rock had disappeared to the Beavers and, you know, the boy band stuff and all that kind of thing again. And so some kids, remember when McCartney played with, what's his ass?
John Lennon, Ringo Starr, George Harrison.
he married Kim Kardashian. What's his name?
West, Kanye.
Yeah. I remember seeing things, comments like, oh my gosh, this old guy playing with Kanye West, that's going to do a lot for his career. These kind of comments that some people don't even know. So I feel like it's great that Greta and, you know, Rival Sons and Dorothy and all these bands that are coming out playing rock and roll music themselves, not to a bunch of tracks, is going to reintroduce everything to kids that don't know about, you know, Creedence Clearwater or even Zeppelin or whatever it is, you know. So I think it's great.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, good luck to you guys, man. I mean, so far what I've heard, I was listening to you guys all last night, and man, it's really good stuff. I really do like it. It's like, it's a three-piece rock band. It's it's just a straight-ahead rock band, like the guys from Greta. What you see is what you get, and that's kind of like the magic of it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. The key is too, is like, it's a band that can play music, you know, on acoustic guitars and stuff. You can either put us in a corner somewhere. You don't need tracks. You don't need anything else but three guys and instruments, and we can play music. That's what's kind of cool about it. It's not reinventing the wheel or anything. It's just doing stuff that I think has been forgotten about.
Mm-hmm. And how long you guys...
Foo Fighters is a perfect example.
I'm sorry, say again now. Which one?
So the Foo Fighters are a good example, too. You know, Grohl always comes out and is like, you know, what you're hearing tonight is being played by the people on stage, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. How long have you guys been touring on the road here?
Oh man, we've been going. I don't know, off and on for the past 4 years at least. I think, you know, it's just finally starting to break a little bit. You know, thanks to you. Thanks for spinning us, man. We really appreciate it. Like, it's been really great. The response to Belladonna's been awesome. So the sleeping in vans and Walmart parking lots is kind of paying off.
Hey, man, you should write a song about that.
I'm sure it's in the works.
It's funny because when you were talking about meeting the guy from Gin Blossoms outside of the back doorway, the venue, I'm like, hey, you should write a song about that. Oh, wait, it's kind of almost been done, like a Jukebox Hero or something like that.
Absolutely. Shooting Star by Bad Company, all that kind of stuff.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Well, Josh, December 2nd here in Detroit with Joe Perry, man. This is going to be a killer. Great to talk to you. Good luck in the future here, and safe travels.
Well, thanks so much. I hope we get to see you when we're there.
Josh Kennedy from the Black Moods right here on the Talkin' Rock podcast. Got to thank him and Trevor Woodley from Hands Like Houses for making this a pretty good double episode for sure. Go check out some of those bands that you may not have heard of before. And we do appreciate you guys listening. Like I said before, 5-star ratings on iTunes are always appreciated. Writing reviews, sharing it with your friends. And just thank you so much for listening. Like I said, also subscribe because we've got all sorts of guests lined up and ready to go right here on the Talkin' Rock podcast. Until we do it again next time, thank you for listening.